I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm the other half your host, Greg Bresnitz. Darren, good to hear you as always.
Good to hear you. We both are lucky enough to have spent some time in the South this week.
Yes, I'm down in Savannah. Had the pleasure of eating at the Gray and the recently opened Husked, and then some other hole-in-the-wall joints. Got my fill of biscuits and grits.
Awesome. Well, I had the wonderful pleasure of sitting down with Jillian Zettler, the executive director of Charleston Wine and Food Festival, kicking off February 28th, going through that whole weekend, and it's going to be a blast. Some of the city's best and the nation's best food people, personalities, and pop-ups that you can enjoy. Tickets are actually still available. I would recommend getting a ticket, hopping on a plane, and going down. It's going to be awesome. Heritage Radio Network is going to be hosting a day on Sunday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And we have a new edition of Snacky Tunes 5 with Jameson Fink and his wonderful partner, asking him her top five wine questions that she has always wanted an answer to, was maybe too afraid to ask. Finally, we have Fruits and Flowers, who talk about going on the road, heading to Treefort Fest, South by Southwest, and their band Sylvia.
Awesome. Well, sit back, enjoy, and here we go. Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
You think. Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Jillian Zettler, Executive Director of Charleston Wine and Food, which is, when this airs, a week and a half away. Thank you for making the time for us.
Oh, you're so welcome.
So for those who are not familiar, let's start broad. What is Charleston Wine and Food Festival?
Charleston Wine and Food Festival is now going into its 13th year.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
Officially an adult.
Teenager. We're a teenager, an unruly teenager. We are now a 5-day festival that takes place the first full week end in March.
Starting in February this year, though, right?
It is. I know that's a little caveat, but Charleston is such a city that is rifled full of wonderful events that we have to share lots of park space.
Sure.
And we are chock full of cooking classes and crazy field trips and parties and dinners and all sorts of things.
Amazing. So before we get to the festival, I want to talk a little bit about you.
Okay.
So when did you first start getting into events? What's brought you into the event world?
Oh, man. I started, I guess, my event experience. I was an education major at Clemson University, and I had nothing to do with events, or at least I didn't think I did. And I ended up with an opportunity as the promotions and marketing director for a cluster of radio stations in Greenville, South Carolina. And just really kind of caught the bug of that, was headhunted to do promotions and marketing for a record label. After that, and just really, really loved kind of that crazy, chaotic adrenaline rush from pulling lots of crazy details together.
I mean, it does get pretty, that rush of doing events is addictive.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of in your blood or it's not.
Yeah, I think people are seen as some like black hole wizard magic that they have no idea, or you just see all the pieces and how they line up.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have gotten so many amazing interns in conjunction with this program that we have with the College of Charleston here. Mm-hmm. And even in my time prior to being in Charleston, and you see these like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed future event folk.
Sure.
And some that think it is a lot about like, is it peonies or is it garden roses or like what are the color of the linens? And it is so not that.
No, that's like the final touches.
Yes.
And so during your time producing music, were there any parallels that you saw back then that are now apply to the way that food festivals are treated?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's funny because I feel like chefs are a lot like rock stars mm-hmm. at this point. So there are some parallels there, herding cats and all those things.
Sure. Love them.
But I think it's just, I remember my first real boss out of college, Chase Murphy, who gave me a great piece of advice. I'll never forget that we were preparing to do this huge promotion with a big pop star at the time. And we had like 2,000 guests outside waiting for this concert. And there started to be these sirens that uh-huh. went off for the nuclear plant that wasn't that far away in Seneca, South Carolina. And I was freaking out. It was like one of my first big events. And he was like, look, you need to kind of decide right now, like whether or not you're going to be the person that like throws energy into worry, or if you're going to treat this like a tennis match. And that analogy just kind of stuck with me, that it really is like beating back the ball at
sure.
all times. And rather than being stressed about it, like I can say very concretely that I don't stress anymore. And you kind of look at it as just like being a killer problem solver.
Yeah. I mean, you can't put out a fire when you're on fire.
Correct.
And so from your time working in radio and doing music events, you had some other jobs, but you eventually wound up at Euphoria Greenville.
That is true.
Which is, as the executive director, which is a music and food-focused mm-hmm. Event, which there are tons of now, but when you were doing it, there was still sort of a burgeoning genre.
Yeah.
So you talk about what it was like during those days and sort of like bridging the gap, and was that when you started thinking about food festivals as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it was that live event experience for me. Like one of my first loves is absolutely music.
Of course.
I grew up in a Beatles, Grateful Dead household, and it was always a backdrop of like any food experience that we had. My parents play music louder than most people.
You're like mom and dad, can you please turn it down?
Yeah, that is definitely the truth. My siblings would concur. but they're just so they're so linked. And I think that I loved that idea that Euphoria was doing really great things on the food side, but it was how could you heighten that marriage between those two things? And, you know, I think that we've done a really nice job of even finding our own way here in Charleston to elevate the music piece as well.
So while you were there, had you heard about the Charleston Food and Wine Festival? Or, like, I mean, it's a fairly well-known festival now, but back in, like, 2010, 2011, 2012, et cetera, that time, how much did you know about it? Was something on your mind? Like, were you eyeing that as a job or someplace you'd want to wind up?
Definitely not. I would say I wasn't eyeing it as a job, but I mean, when you want to do something well, you try to look for the people around you that are also doing things well.
Sure.
So one of the first things that I did at the time was I grabbed my counterpart and I said, we're going to go to Charleston and check it out. They're in our market. And we still continue to do that. It was kind of seeing the things that they were doing, signage and events and points of egress. And obviously they were doing a lot of things great. There was a great foundation that was built. But, I mean, I just think you always want to see what other people are doing. And I've actually tried to make it more of a habit now that I visit a lot of non-food festival events because I just think you can get some really cool ideas and inspiration from places that, you know, we don't want to do what anyone else is doing.
Sure.
We want to do new things.
Yeah, I mean, with so many food festivals now, the base can feel very similar, but pulling in those outside elements, art, technology, music,
wellness,
charity work, which you guys do a lot of, can make it stand out. So even though you didn't have your eye in Charleston Wine and Food, how did you get pulled in?
Well, I mean, it seemed like for me it would be a really big professional challenge. The festival here was much, much bigger than what I was doing.
How big was Euphoria?
Euphoria, at the time that I was there, and I think the numbers are pretty similar, was about 4,000 to 5,000 people over the course of 4 days. And we had grown that event during my tenure from 3 to 4 days. And then, you know, here in Charleston, we have like a little over 23,000 people. That number has increased quite a bit since 4 years ago.
Sure.
We also like started on a Wednesday instead of starting on a Thursday and, you know, started programming days like events later into Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now we're finding people are coming in earlier to Charleston, they're leaving later. And it allowed us to have more dynamic programming so things weren't conflicting so much.
So how did they rope you in?
Well, I mean, I think for me, it just felt like, all right, this is next level.
Sure.
And it's basically in my backyard and it's in Charleston. You know, I mean, from a backdrop standpoint, you can't picture places in the U.S. that are much more beautiful and bountiful than Charleston to produce a food event.
It's idyllic.
And I think the thing that honestly, like, I went into the process not expecting to be a finalist and kind of was like, all right, whatever will be. But what was really alluring during the interview process was just, I mean, they put me through the ringer. I mean, it was 6 months of interviews. And I think what I actually really loved is how intense people were about who was going to get the job because there's just such an extreme amount of care on, like, it's a big city with a big marquee reputation, but it's still a small town in a lot of ways.
And this, I would say, as far as events go that represent or an ambassador to the city compared to other markets of similar size, is a key event that shows people what Charleston really has to offer.
Yeah, I mean, there have been people that have opened restaurants here because they came for the festival. There are people that have moved here and relocated because of the festival.
Easy to fall in love.
Yeah, it's really easy to fall in love. And, you know, I love that those are all the intangibles. Those are all the stories that that we love being passed along that don't necessarily fall into like a pie graph.
No. And so when you took over 2013, 2014?
It was 2014, but I literally started like 2 months before the festival happened. So I was a little bit more of a spectator in 14.
And what was the state of the festival? I mean, it must have, because what people don't realize is, like, 2 months out, things are sort of set.
Oh, they're set.
They're set. Sorry, not even sort of set.
They're set.
Maybe you get to pick what type of flowers are on the table.
Yeah.
That's when you get to come in and pick the color of the linens. But What was the current state? What did you see? What did you like? You know, where did you want to take it?
I think that food festivals in general, at least at that time, obviously, like you said, there's been a lot that have cropped up even mm-hmm. since then. But there's a stigma attached to them that they're for a certain type of person and a certain demographic.
Certain income bracket, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I wanted to see the festival be as accessible as possible for different types of people because, you know, dynamic pricing, dynamic experiences, making sure, like, because everyone's food identity is different. And mm-hmm. we all, you know, some people, you know, they want the white tablecloth experience all the time. Some
sure.
people, you know, their relationship with food are food trucks and street food, and all of that is cool. And I think that what we're trying to do now is make sure that it's just really diverse and really interesting, and that you could have 15 people say they love Charleston wine and food, and the reasons that they go could be completely different.
Four different Venn diagrams.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about this year's festival and the awesome lineup. We do not have enough time to cover all of it because there's so many amazing events, but we're going to hit some of the highlights. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. They're coming everywhere. welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're with Jillian Zettler, Executive Director of Charleston Wine & Food. And before the break, we were talking about how to differentiate different food festivals. You have a lot of these secondary, tertiary cities that have their own unique style and food culture. But sometimes you go to these food festivals and it feels like you could be anywhere.
Yeah.
So how do you balance the curation of local flavor, yet bringing in that national talent that sort of puts it, you know, on the national culinary map?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We actually had a really deep dive after last year's festival, making sure that we weren't getting too siloed in how we create the programming. And, you know, North Star and all that, like, those are, like, really buzzy terms right now in business. But we did talk about higher purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And the team really kind of dialed in on what we felt like that was really quickly. And, you know, that's meaningful connections, making sure that we're vivid storytellers and that we always have a sense of place. And that sense of place is key in everything we do. So we try to ask those questions as we're building events. And I think what we do really well is that, you know, it's not everything under a white tent. You're experiencing things from, you know, Mount Pleasant to James Island, Ondaw, you're on the water, you're in non-traditional venues, and that makes it feel really special. And I think what does make it unique is that we're asking folks to come in and feel that sense of collaboration. And, you know, so now we have chefs that are coming from not only all over the U.S., but we also have people that are coming in internationally as well.
I mean, which is amazing to be flying in to Charleston. From overseas.
Yeah.
So when you start thinking about the programming, how do you start? You know, is it 3x5 cards on a pushpin board? Is it just a whiteboard? You know, how do you start laying out? Do you have one or two marquee events like, we have to do this, these are never going away, and then you start filling in the different gaps?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a lot of things. So there's definitely some fan favorites that we kind of go, oh gosh, like, if people would revolt if we took away Pinot Envy or whatever. But then there's, you know, it really has been a conscious decision with the team to say 85% to 90% of the programming is going to change every year, mm-hmm. because guests have a lot of choice at this point about where they can go, and we've got to make them feel like there's going to be something new every year that they want to check out. We actually had a pretty funny process. We have a former teacher on our team, and she suggested a very democratic way to throw out ideas. So we actually, phase one was a lot of, like, large post-its on the wall.
Love that post-it process.
Some really great classic rock playing in the background, everyone with a Sharpie marker, and you all write your ideas. And then we all went back and we, like, starred the ideas that we liked. And the ones that got the most stars, you ended up chatting about, and the person could kind of, like, do their 30-second soapbox pitch.
Yeah.
That's part one. I mean, sometimes we have partners that give us great ideas for events. Sometimes chefs end up giving us ideas. You know, we've done a couple of rounds of things with John Lewis, and, you know, a lot of those come straight from his crazy brain. So, I mean, they kind of come in a myriad of ways, and sometimes the programming is even informed based on, like, a chef that we've been dying to work with that's finally coming, and so it kind of finally makes sense to do event X because they'll be around.
And I'm sure events or types of events change with the year and the current trends and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, a bit. It's weird because you're actually, like, we'll go through and our final with large quotation marks event schedule will be kind of vetted out in April.
Yeah.
So we literally go from, you know, books close on 2018.
Oh, so you're talking like 8 months out.
Oh, yeah.
9 months out.
Like, the running joke in here is, guess what? In 2 weeks, you know, the festival will be over, and in 3 weeks we'll be talking about the next one. And so we already have a pre-canned list of things we didn't get to do in 18 that might come up in 19.
Sure.
You know, venues that we know might be opening in the next year and what would be really cool to do in that space.
So let's talk about some of the events that you have this year.
Sure.
One of my favorite is that you're bringing in a fashion event with the legendary Nancy Silverton.
Oh, Nancy. I love her.
Love Nancy. special place in my heart now that I live in LA. She's just like, she Prince essentially is in my mind responsible for good bread in the city.
Yes.
But it's called Some Like It Hot in Hot Couture anyway. And so what was the importance of bringing fashion in to the conversation for food this year?
Well, we've got this killer, amazing boutique, Hamden Clothing on King Street, and Stacey Smallwood, who's the owner, is just, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on air, but she's a badass.
You can say it. You can say a lot worse.
All right, good. Well, she's a badass. And I think, again, it's like looking for those other places where food intersects with something else. And knowing that there's an audience for that conversation. And Nancy's just, I mean, she's iconic for a million different reasons, but I love that, you know, from a fashion standpoint, I mean, she's like walking out, doing her power walking in Marnie, and, you know, like why? And you're in a kitchen, and where did that love come from? And composition of plates. And I just feel like there's so many different ways that conversation can go. And she's even cooler because she's super humble, and I don't even think she realizes how cool she is.
No. Another sort of fashion icon, but for a different reason, who's coming in is Ellen Bennett, who we absolutely love here at Snacky Tunes. And she's taking her Brunch Squad event, which she started in LA, and I guess that's a good idea if someone who's like, I have an event and let me do it here.
Yeah, I mean, we pitched it to her. We, you know, if you follow her on social media,
it's so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, and you see that she does these brunches in her beautifully Instagram-friendly home, and her pig Oliver and her hubs and all their friends. And so we kind of wondered, like, could we do this event on steroids in Charleston? And so then, you know, anyone who knows Ellen, when you have a brainstorming session with her, starts riffing, and you're just trying your best to like write everything down as fast as she's saying it. And she put together a killer lineup of chefs with us, along with William Sonoma. And we're basically going to have all of the folks that are coming to this brunch be active participants in kind of creating this pop-up experience on the fly. So it's going to be totally chaotic and crazy, which Ellen does that really gracefully. And I think that as long as people come open-minded, it's going to be one of the like sleeper coolest events of the weekend.
You'll leave smiling, no doubt. Absolutely. If you come with an open mind. And then finally, I want to talk about Pecha Kucha and choir.
Yes.
Because that to me is the standout head scratcher, but I gotta want to see it because I don't know if I'll ever see anywhere else. What is it?
All right, so Pecha Kucha, we'll start with Pecha Kucha. Pecha Kucha, if you're not familiar, is this Japanese form of storytelling that was actually started amongst a group of architects, and I guess the primary reason was to kind of bring people out of their shell and talk about something that they were really passionate about. We were able to work collaboratively with a local creative group called Parliament a few years ago and said, hey, what do you think about doing this together? But we kind of thematically have all the people that participate in this Pecha Kucha night be from the wine and food space somehow. So you have a certain amount of time, 6 minutes, 40 seconds, and 20 seconds per slide to basically share something you're really passionate about. I think I had the chance to do it in year 10 as a presenter, and I think some of the most magical things about it are that in the group of presenters, without really, you know, doing a lot of marionette pulling on the back end, you end up with people that are funny, you end up with people that are somber, you end up with people that, it ends up being this like kind of magical array of stories that are shared. And it's rapid fire, so it's kind of like a TED Talk on steroids because there's lots of conditions in place with how it goes.
Gotcha. And the choir?
Choir was a personal Jillian executive director. I want to figure out how to do this.
Love it.
And the audience of Pecha Kucha, I think, like, because there ends up being just this like really loving, open-minded vibe at those events. Choir is basically like a flash mob for singing. And to me personally, like, it's almost like Ratatouille. Anyone can cook, anyone can sing. And so these guys from Toronto started this program where they very often bring people together for one night with basic sheet music, and by the end of the evening you've become a fully formed choir. They've done epic Petchakucha nights with some really great lead vocalists. They've done homages to, you know, Bowie and to all sorts of folks, Prince. And so we're going to have this choir kind of flash mob choir thing happening right at the end of Petchakucha. And I just think the world is like a really insanely complicated, stressed out, sometimes sad place. And to have 1,000 people in a room that can celebrate other people's creativity and then be able to kind of join together and sing, like, that's a room I want to be in. And we want to create rooms that people want to be in.
I mean, that's a beautiful sentiment. And there's also some ethos that ties back into the festival's whole about how much you support the city through not just the economic growth of people coming in and more people coming in every year, but also through your charity work.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the programs you have in place, the scholarships, One at E-Place training, and the work that you do with the community to help take that room and turn it into a city?
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely takes a village. The festival takes a village. It was started as a 501c3 organization. There's been like various iterations of what that's looked like. You know, we, again, like along that same conversation about higher purpose, we did a really deep internal kind of audit on what is intrinsically driving us to want to make this festival better and better. And, you know, it's kind of hard to say at this point that you need to focus the attention on Charleston, because there are a lot of people that are aware that it's a beautiful city. But how can we continue to be an economic impact driver that speaks to a need? And when we were talking to local chefs, shareholders, hotels, the need is that, you know, from a workforce standpoint, there's so much growth and there needs to be some sort of connection to supporting, you know, the job growth in areas that are needed locally. 180 Place Training is this amazing program that basically gives all of the goods to folks that are either at 180 Place, meaning that you know, they may have been homeless, and veterans, and gives them the opportunity to develop a skill set in our rapid, like, 6-week training program, allowing them to feel ready to apply and retain a job in the culinary and hospitality space. So we did kind of a dry run of this at the end of the year last year, because their graduation is kind of predicated on an externship that they normally do in a local restaurant. Hopefully that local restaurant hires them at the close of the program. So we actually used the festival as the final stage of their program. Amazing. Last year. And virtually every person that participated in the program was offered a job on the spot. And that, I mean, we just were like, ugh, like, this is why we're doing what we're doing, because these are the types of opportunities and connections, again, like dialing back to that higher purpose, meaningful connections, sense of place, you know, storytelling opportunities. And so now we're officially, you know, we're officially connected to 180 Place Training. There will be another round of externships during the festival.
Incredible.
And, you know, and I would be remiss in saying that one of the coolest things is that one of the folks that was on the ground during the festival last year, who was hired on the spot at our finale event, became a kitchen manager within 6 months of being on the job.
Can you say their name?
Well, Smoke Barbecue. Roland was Smoke Barbecue's owner, and he hired this gentleman, Stefan, who is affectionately known as the Reverend. And, you know, there's a larger story there, but basically through a little bit of a happy accident in the kitchen, ended up creating this cornbread recipe that they're now actually going to turn into the Reverend's Cornbread Company. So he kind of, he went from homeless to business partner, business owner in a year's time.
Beautiful. And all thanks to the festival and the community and his hard work.
And amazing members of the Charleston community who are just committed to doing good things.
Awesome. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough. I know you have a lot of work to get back to. If people want to come and check it out, where can they get tickets? Where can they see all the information?
Yeah, so head to charlestonwineandfood.com. If you're overwhelmed or you need assistance, we've got a killer ticketing coordinator. But the website's the best place to snag something before they're all gone.
They're all gone. And we're excited because Heritage Radio Network is going to be there.
We can't wait.
I know. It'll be some of the great and best team members down there sending our love from Charleston to Brooklyn and beyond.
And beyond.
But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
So much.
We have another song from the archives, and then we have a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, this is Jameson Fink. I'm the senior digital editor at Wine Enthusiast Magazine. And for this installment of Snacky Tunes Fives, I thought I would do something a little different. I would have my girlfriend Emily ask me five questions. I don't know what the questions are. They will be about wine, I hope. Emily and I have enjoyed drinking wine together, and she's enthusiastic about it. And she's not a newbie, but we're drinking a lot of crazy fun things. So I'm wondering what questions about wine are on her mind. So, Emily, your first question for me.
What is the weirdest wine you've ever had?
The weirdest wine I've ever had, when I was in college, this hippie guy I knew made an illegal cranberry wine, and we started drinking it before it was really ready, but we were just so delighted to drink something that was illicit and didn't kill us, and it was a lot of I guess fun would be one way to describe it, but no, it was fun. We had fun. That's probably the weirdest wine I've ever drank, and that's the only I've had rhubarb wine, but this is good wine in a way. Actually, a winery that I really like on the Puget Sound of Washington State at Whidbey Island Winery. They used to make this delicious rhubarb wine, and it drank a lot like a rosé. It was super dry and tart. So that is like diametrically opposite of my cranberry wine experience from college.
So if you had a desert island wine, what would that be?
It would be rosé champagne, kind of on that color of cranberry, rhubarb, pink theme. Rosé champagne, it would might be, well, it's my desert island wine, something like Krug Rosé or Dom Rosé or Vilmart, just any great rosé champagne.
What is the most interesting grape and why?
I'm going to say Chenin Blanc to me is the most interesting grape as it's expressed in France's Loire Valley, because it can be, in this one region, it can be dry, it can be semi-sweet, it can be sparkling, it can be a dessert wine, like a full-on sticky dessert wine. So it's such a chameleon, and I have such a soft spot for the Loire Valley. Also, there's great Chenin Blanc. Well, I've had, you know, California, South Africa. So, it can thrive in a lot of places, but it's still fairly nerdy and esoteric. And that's why I really love Chenin Blanc.
Do you think there's any food that doesn't go with wine?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I hate saying things like this because, you know, I don't want to sound like a dick, like, oh, you can't have this with that. And a lot of people enjoy this with that. And it's really not the person who I want to be. But, let me just say something that is shocking, is that I don't like wine and chocolate. I don't like red wine and chocolate. Like, now I'm talking dry red wine and chocolate. We are doing this on Valentine's Day, so Valentine's Day will be gone, so no one's, like, you know, like choking on their chocolate and Cabernet right now. But I just dry red wine and chocolate to me just is unpleasant. Now, if you want to talk about, like, sweet wines like Port or Madeira or, like, sweeter sherries and chocolate, I'd be like, hell yeah. So I don't like those. Maybe something like Cabernet and oysters. I think oysters with red wine, unless it's maybe like a chilled Beaujolais, can be tough. Although it's not a wine, but Guinness and oysters is one of the best combinations I've ever had. It's almost probably actually better than any wine and oysters combo I've had, and that includes champagne and Muscadet.
Is there ever a wine that you've had to learn to enjoy drinking?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, it's like eating foods. It's like, I think there are things as a kid, like, I never thought I would like Brussels sprouts or mushrooms or things like that, and now I love them. So yeah, I think there definitely is a learning curve. And it's not a learning thing, like you can't like I must learn it, but it's just sort of like, your tastes change, your palate evolves, but sometimes you try things at first. I mean, you know, sweet wines would be an example. Just like, oh, they're so sweet. They're too sweet. But they're some of the nicest wines I've had in the world in my life. So I'm really a big fan of those. I think anything, really. I mean, sometimes if you've never had a big, rich Cabernet, that can be an adjustment, or a sweet wines, or wines with like ripping acidity, like a Sauvignon Blanc can be really challenging because it's like enamel chipping with its acidity. And you just have to, it's like lemonade. Like, some people like their lemonade with a lot of sugar, and some people like it with more on the tart side with more lemon juice.
So what is our Valentine's Day wine?
Our Valentine's Day wine is a white wine. It is a kind of a world traveler, world journey type of interesting wine. It's a Albarino. It's a white wine, and that grape is most famous in Spain, but this one is actually from Uruguay. So I thought it would be fun to drink something that's kind of transportive and a new discovery and unusual and something out of the ordinary. I didn't come prepared with champagne for this, but I think this wine has a fun story and a great dialogue, and would get, if like this was, I don't know if it'd be your, you know, like a first date on Valentine's Day, that's pretty bold. But if you were, it'd be cool to bring a wine that's a conversation piece that you could tell a story about You don't have to be some, you know, wine expert, but just be like, hey, this wine's from Uruguay. That's pretty cool, huh? Yeah, it's Alvarino. It's a Spanish grape. So how about that? And I think it's kind of an interesting, fun departure from the ordinary. And I think that's five questions. Am I right?
That's right. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks, Emily. Happy Valentine's Day to you. Thanks a lot.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome back, Snacky Tunes. We have Fruit and Flowers live in studio.
Woohoo!
Hello. Hello.
Do you want to go around the room and introduce yourselves? Maybe a little fun fact on what you play?
Fun fact.
Or not a fun fact, or just what you play.
I forgot my name.
Fun.
No fun.
No fun.
This is Lizzie Wakefield.
My name is Lizzie, and fun fact is I have a lizard.
What type of lizard?
A brown anole.
You've surpassed my lizard knowledge.
I'm Caroline. I play bass, and I have eaten tarantulas off of a tree.
You what?
In Belize, one time.
Just like plucked right off the tree and...
They have a big nest, and you... It's kind of like crack... What are those? Snap, crackle...
Pop rocks?
Pop rocks. It's kind of like pop rocks.
That's the flavor.
More the texture.
More the texture.
Yeah.
What's the flavor?
Sand.
Oh.
It's not that exciting.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I've ever tasted sand either, probably.
Never, like, at
the
beach?
Never been to the beach.
One of your videos was shot at the beach.
Shooting like a mouth of sand.
Yeah.
Just remember them.
I'm pretty sure you ate it.
I definitely ate it. Okay. Well, my name's Anna. I play guitar.
And she
eats sand.
Fun
fact is I eat sand. No, but I definitely ate it when there was a giant wave during one of our video shoots. And
oh, yeah, I remember that.
I got knocked.
You got it.
I got wiped out.
Every time we are shooting a video, and I get knocked by, second time was by the train. We were in the train and the,
oh my God.
And the train, they suddenly stopped, and Anna, like...
I got pretty injured from that, actually. It took me a while for... Yeah.
Did you have, like, the panic of, like, how infinite you felt in the universe when a wave just takes you out? You're like, this could be it.
Yes, there was that moment of panic, but I don't think I felt infinite or at one with the universe. It was just like, oh, God, my face is about to be full of sand, and this is going to hurt real bad. Yeah.
And my name is Jose. I play drums in the band. And a fun fact, maybe that I was in there was like a marching band in my high school, and I was in it, so... That's why I play drums.
Oh, okay. Origin story.
Wow. Yeah, we won a really important contest. It's one of my milestone.
Great.
What was the contest?
No, just marching bands.
Oh, okay.
Back there in Bogota.
Battle of the marching bands?
Yeah, basically. It doesn't sound that cool, but it was really cool at the time.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
How old were you?
Yeah, thanks.
How old were you?
16.
Speaking of origin stories, you formed in 2015 in Bushwick.
Yeah.
The broken AC.
On Tame Street.
On Tame Street.
Right over here.
What is it about broken ACs in apartments that lead to creation?
Perspiration. There's something, isn't there that quote about perspiration and inspiration? This is perspiration, like literally.
Literal perspiration.
Yeah.
What was the genesis for the formation of the band, or how did it come to be?
Well, I had come back from South by Southwest that year with Tara from Shark Muffin, and I was like, hey, I want to get a group of people together and do a band now. So I got back and just looked around,
and then there were people.
And then the angels arrived. And then we started recording.
And you played your first gig at Northside Festival not too soon after, right?
Like literally 2 weeks after we started the band. And we wrote those five songs just for that.
I think maybe it was like 3 or 4.
I think it was like 5 weeks.
It felt like 2. But it might have been 4.
There were a lot of very
it was
late
a confusing
nights.
Time.
Just for the inquiring in future bands, how did you get the offer before the songs were written or before anything was heard?
Probably Tara, right?
I think
no,
it was Shaw.
It was Shaw was working at the venue that that the Northside Festival was at.
Which venue?
Muchmore's. Mm.
Well, there Northside is at a lot of venues, but that's the one we played.
Yeah, but also I was kind of thinking, you know, we should go ahead and book a show because otherwise we won't feel the pressure. And then, you know.
It was a good idea.
Thanks.
I mean, you're still here. You still exist.
We survived.
You survived. How many of those songs made it onto the Drug Tax EP?
All of them.
So all of it
that
was
That is
just,
the Drug Tax that is, EP.
Oh, so
that
I think there were one or two that we wrote after that initial burst. I think Down, Down, Down and Dark Surf we wrote after.
That's true.
Jose was already in the band when we wrote
I joined the band like
Dark Surf
5 months after.
Maybe not even. It might have been 3 or 4.
It wasn't that long.
It was in November, yeah. So yeah.
So must have, yeah.
May, June, July, August.
Can we hear a song?
No.
Okay.
Sure.
Sure.
What are you going to play for us first?
I guess we should do Out of Touch because we were just talking
about
it.
Oh, yeah. This is our probably the first song that we...
The first full song.
Yeah.
This was the you're like, that okay, we have the show.
Yeah.
Song one.
Yes.
And how did what is the song about? How did it come into being?
It's well, about Shaw's love.
Shaw wrote it about some girl.
Oh. Where's Shaw and where's the girl?
No one knows.
The girl might be on the West Coast or something, and Shaw's probably around the corner right now.
Yeah, he's probably in bed or at his computer.
He's probably listening right now.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Shaw.
Hey, Shaw.
Hey.
Well, here we go live on Snacky Tunes.
Out of time, couldn't make you mine.
spent most of last year supporting the EP, which also earned you spot on the hardest working band in New York. What are some of the highlights of last year's tour, and where did you go in America?
Oh boy. Woo! Which one?
We went to Canada. That's not in America.
That's not in North America, but where in Canada?
Oh, we had... I don't know if we want to get into this argument. Yeah.
Please do.
Last year we had this discussion about...
Heated. Discourse.
Yeah, apparently here in the States, you are taught that there are 7 continents.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the world doesn't agree with that, because we think that there are 5 continents, actually. Like, America is a whole
North
continent.
North and South America are
North
one.
Central.
Yeah.
South.
And we didn't know this at first, and we got in a very passionate, heated, drunk, angry
I was just watching.
You were not just watching. Anyway. You were yelling at me about Central America, so, and I was saying I didn't want to look at a map, and you were...
I was like... Look at the map!
Why aren't you curious? What's wrong with you?
So it's just the Americas.
Yeah. It was really interesting because the conclusion was like, there's not such thing as an absolute truth, you know? There are just agreements and a standard. Like, there's like a standard knowledge, but that can be variates. So that was like the conclusion.
What is truth,
pretty
man?
Much. Yeah.
I mean, who draws the maps? Am I right?
Who draws them?
Yeah.
Not us.
I mean, the Earth used to be a square. So,
yeah, we used to be flat.
We used to be in the center of the solar system.
So, is there
also
a consensus?
The planets revolve around us.
Is there a consensus among the band of, is there 5 or 7 continents?
6.
I think we agreed to disagree.
5 and 7.
5. Both truths.
Depending on how we are feeling, I guess.
When in Rome.
So, we went to Canada last year, but I think the most exciting thing for me was going to the West Coast. That was a feat of craziness.
Why is that?
Because driving to the West Coast is insane. Also driving all the way up to Seattle and then down to Austin is ridiculous.
We did that without stopping, basically.
Yeah, we did our tour kickoff show in Brooklyn, and then we did North Carolina, Nashville, Amarillo.
And then San Diego.
Whoa, nothing in between?
No.
There was a lot in between,
I think we stopped in Albuquerque.
We stopped in Albuquerque.
I felt like Bugs Bunny.
Also in Truth and Consequence.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Truth and Consequence. Time, yeah.
Back in my tour managing days, the booking agent put us in Miami and then Toronto 2 days later.
What?
Oh, my God.
And
that was very considerate.
Very considerate. And we did it. And then when I was older, I was like, there's so many places we could have played between Miami and Toronto. So I feel for you.
Yeah.
On that, it was a Swedish band, and I was like, you need to get temporary licenses because I can't drive for 48 hours.
Did you drive two days straight?
We drove 2 days straight. We stopped on someone's floor, and then we like made it. Yeah. It was.
How many hours is it driving straight from
Miami
to Toronto?
I think we did. I can't remember. It just is like a bar. There was one 20-hour segment.
It was cold. Yeah. It's gotta be 50.
Yeah, it was so.
I feel bad for the vehicle too. That's not good.
We had a good vehicle. It was a rental.
Okay.
You have a good van, right?
I mean, screw it if it's a rental.
Yeah, if it's a rental, you're like, we actually just like knifed the tires and left it in Canada.
Tight.
But you have a good van.
We have a. It's got a lot of personality.
It's a bus.
It's a bus. Oh, it's a bus?
Yeah.
It's right outside.
What's the make and model?
It's like a short
bus. It's a Lima bus.
It's a 1998 Ford E450.
Oh. Was it bought from another band, or was it purchased?
A band of sorts.
Dave Lotito.
Dave Lotito. A guy on Long Island has a party bus company.
Does it have? It's a former party bus.
Yes.
Is there a pole in it?
There. It looks like there were spaces. Holes in the floor.
There were spaces.
There's evidence.
Mounts.
Yeah.
It has like a these. How do you call that? Like
the
these.
Mirror.
The mirror.
Like
an
infinity mirror on the roof. It's still there.
There's still lasers.
There. Oh yeah.
There's lasers in it.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah, you should come check it out.
I mean, absolutely.
It's a little messy right now.
That's fine. Well, it's a tour bus.
Yeah.
They're not known for their cleanliness.
They're not.
No. Well, what's the sleeping arrangement in there as well?
There's bank seating. So
it's really comfortable.
If necessary, we can all sleep on there.
But the funny thing about this tour we did to the West it was like we were touring with another band, and so it was like 14 of us.
Oh, that's whatever. There were 14 going to the West Coast.
Oh, in the party bus.
Yes. Yeah.
There were,
now, if we were like...
And everybody's stuff.
Ex-girlfriends. It was crazy. The band.
Oh, I was going to say, it was full. It started with a bunch of girlfriends, and then it was ex-girlfriends.
Everyone was exes.
Yeah, by the end.
It was us, ex-girlfriends, and some boyfriends.
Comfortably, just for the listeners, if we were responsible adults, how many comfortably would fit in there?
Eight.
Seven.
Oh, okay.
Eight.
Four.
Eight.
No, I think seven.
Seven or eight.
Yeah, no.
It depends how much luggage there is.
Right, but not 14 people plus gear plus luggage.
Oh, my God.
Plus 3,000 miles.
To be fair, I think it was only 12, but still.
No, there was 14 at one time.
At one point, there was 14.
Seriously?
When Jay and Ian or Brom or something.
Yeah.
I think we traded out. Didn't we?
We were pretty good with
out Ian.
We had
Brom
a constantly revolving human...
Was
like a boyfriend would fly in, and then one would leave, and then another one would fly
and
in.
And then we lost
the
an ex girlfriend.
Yeah. And then we we did lose an ex girlfriend.
One of the members
quit.
Yeah.
In the middle of the tour.
That happened on my other tour gig. Is that it was a band? They had two drummers, and the tour was so terrible.
Drummers?
I mean, that was the first mistake. But we, but we landed in Philadelphia, and he said, "I'm not getting the van. I quit. I thought you were going to rip up my plane ticket if I told you that." And I was like, no, that's terrible. And then just like left and left the tour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait,
that's
so he wanted to wait until we.
He got back to the East Coast because he thought we would rip up his ticket, which is like that's a really. I mean, that speaks more to the person.
I know, that's so paranoid.
Very paranoid. It's like, that's not also not how tickets work anymore.
Like, you still have a confirmation number.
It's, like, not like, it's not like 1980s where it's like, like that.
If you don't have your boarding pass, then.
You print out another one.
Yeah.
Can we hear another song?
Sure.
What are you going to play for us?
Which one should we do? Okay. We haven't recorded this one yet. The next two, we haven't recorded yet.
Do you have a gig coming up? Is that why you wrote new songs?
I mean, no, we just, we haven't recorded in a while, and we just decided to keep writing songs.
Cool. Snacky Tunes exclusive.
Yeah, I guess. Have we?
I don't think we've, no.
Well, I hope it goes okay.
Here we go, live on Snacky Tunes.
Same old lies so many times.
Festival season starts next month. You're going to South by Southwest first and then Treefort Fest, but South by Southwest in an official capacity.
Woohoo! I'm so excited for these two things.
Tell me.
You have no idea.
We are actually playing a festival this month.
Oh, before that, too.
Next month, February.
Oh, Ohio.
Yeah. Bright Cleveland. Winter about that. Fest.
Winter Fest.
In Cleveland. Bright Winter.
Bright Winter. Bright Winter.
Also, but...
Yeah. That's on February 24th, which may or may not be... yeah.
Great.
I'm super excited to go to Texas because I'm... That's my home.
Are you from Austin?
No.
Where are you from?
Just... I'm from Amarillo.
Oh, okay.
But the whole place is like...
The whole...
She's got a tattoo.
I
on her arm. Of Texas.
Also became an appreciator of Texas later in life.
An appreciator. Do you miss breakfast tacos?
Yes.
Oh my God.
There's a place that apparently opened up down by Wall Street that serves breakfast tacos from like 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. during the week.
I will never go to Wall Street.
Yeah. This is just a fact. What you do with that knowledge is kind of up to you. Whose showcase are you playing at South By?
Good question.
We're playing the Cigar City Management Showcase for sure. And we're playing the Outer Orbit Booking Showcase. Those two, that's our team, I guess. Yeah, not I guess. That's our team.
That's your team.
Good
team.
We
also
work
Little
with
Dickman.
Both of them.
Yeah, and Little Dickman.
Hopefully we'll be, on a Little Records. Dickman Showcase too, which is also... Man, we're so lucky. We are working with the really caring,
lovely,
excellent, diligent human people.
With good taste and...
A good hearts. Yep.
Do you think that you'll do just those three shows? Are you going to play every show that comes your way and just be like, we're just going to do 11? Who cares?
That's kind of what we did last year.
How many did you do last year? Eight, I think.
Eight's pretty good.
I think we did eight shows in 6 days.
Yeah, eight.
That seems about right.
Yeah, because we had two days, yeah.
I think we had a day off and we had two something like that.
How do you feel by the time you're getting to like the sixth or seventh show? Like you're in a groove or just like, why did we do this?
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Last year I was like, I was like dying of heat exhaustion and dehydration. But this year I'll probably not do that.
The price of water goes up a lot.
Yeah. Maybe you can just put some water in the back of the party limo bus.
Yeah. Well, we're not taking it this time, so that won't be happening.
Oh. Okay. And let's talk about Treefort Fest because I don't think as many people know about it, but that is also an amazing one. Especially because they're a B Corp, which is incredible.
They're what?
B Corp. Like, they're a profit that's run like a not-for-profit. It's a good designation
that's
for companies.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tight. Can we be one of those?
I think that you have to apply, but probably, if you work real hard. But they're amazing, because essentially it's like, they're a for-profit company that does good. Like,
that's
they don't
great.
Maximize profit. They, like, it's super well-rounded.
That's great.
Yeah.
I've never been to Idaho, but I'm super pumped to go play this festival because one of my heroes / idols is playing.
Who?
Cindy Wilson.
Oh my gosh!
And we might get to meet her, so I don't know.
Have you ensured that you are not playing at the same time?
Oh God.
No.
I mean, the chances are slimish.
Yeah.
I think there's 3 or 4 days of music and.
The look of fear that just crossed your face. I'm so sorry for introducing that. I apologize.
I don't think we actually, I don't think we know the exact, as of this moment, we don't know the exact timing.
And for those who don't know it, it happens in Boise. It started 2012, and it's pretty similar to South By. Like, it's almost like a sister festival. Venues across town, really rad.
I think you know more about Treefort than I do.
Built to Spill's playing. George Clinton's playing.
Yeah. Briar and P-Funk.
Yeah, it looks pretty amazing.
The lineup is
really good.
I've already been just listening through to all the bands I've never even heard of, and I've discovered I like Wimps.
Oh, I love Wimps.
Yeah, and there are a couple other French Vanilla.
Idaho, man.
Idaho. I've never
what
been.
What is there?
I don't know.
Potatoes?
Twin Falls?
Certainly some animals, I hope.
Yeah. It looks pretty rad.
Flora, fauna.
And then you also are going to Europe this year, too. This is so much exciting. And Meg, where are you going? Who are you going with?
We're going with ourselves.
We're going...
Just all over the UK. We're going to maybe like go out, but Brighton. And
we're still working.
We're still working on the trajectory. I know we'd really like to do Stockholm and Berlin and Amsterdam and Paris.
Cool. Do you need a tour manager?
Yeah, you want to come?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know how to drive in the UK with the roads on the opposite side?
I mean, if I've got time. I've got time.
Practice?
I can practice.
We need a tour.
Yeah, actually, we do.
Yeah.
We'll find a tour manager for you.
Thanks.
Anybody listening, they need a tour manager.
Yeah.
I don't think we can pay for, like, your plane ticket.
No, you get one from over there.
What?
Yeah. You get one over there, yeah.
Tight.
Fixers.
So, yeah. Talk. We'll talk.
Talk. Well, we'll make sure we have time for one more song, but where can people find you, hear the EP, find out your tour dates, see photos?
The internet.
The internet.
We, Instagram. We do have fruitxflowers.com.
You're one of the few bands that actually have a website that's not just Bandcamp.
Thanks.
I mean,
we need to do a bunch of work on it. I know that. Most of that is, I have to do that because I made it and I know where all the things are.
All the things.
You know, like the password for the domain and the, you know,
hosting
all that. And the hosting and the this and that. But anyway, fruitxflowers.com does exist.
And Instagram is fruitxflowers.
And facebook.com/fruitxflowers. Twitter
on
is
Tinder also, yeah. Fruitx Flowers.
Tinder, yeah. Okay, Cupid.
Last,
Fruitx.
Last question.
XX Flowers.
If you were a food or a dish, what would you be?
Like collectively or individually?
Collectively, as a band.
Because I would be sweet potatoes.
Okay.
But collectively? I'll take
that. But I like that answer.
No, I'm thinking more like,
like a Cajun wild chili fusion of stuff, like probably like
jumble
a vegetable platter.
I thought of this, and the only thing I could think of was sweet and sour chicken for some reason.
That is actually the correct answer. You win. We have a plate.
I can't get it out of my head.
We have a plate for you outside. Everyone else
General
gets pizza.
Says.
Oh, tight.
Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening this week on Snacky Tunes. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. What are you going to take us out with?
Another song.
Perfect. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Here we go, live on Snacky Tunes.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.